KPFK is heard on K254AH, Isla Vista, and K229BO, Rancho Bernardo.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hayden. I'm honored to substitute for Ian Masters, who's off on a well-deserved vacation, according to Spencer Downing, who's joining me with Alan Minsky. I have just been for over a week in Sweden investigating the WikiLeaks case, and I'll be on my way to London for the appellate hearing on July 12th and 13th. In the case of Julian Assange. And I'm going to take the opportunity to brief you, the audience, for a few minutes, and then we'll go back to Q&A and roundtable discussion. The reason I'm interested in WikiLeaks, I looked the other day, I'd written 22 blogs and articles about this case because I saw it as the emergence of a post-Seattle phenomenon of young hackers and radicals and anarchists who were seizing control of the means of producing information, so to speak, and they were giving the Pentagon and the world's diplomats a really hard time at liberating information from the clutches of secrecy, secrecy that has only grown since the end of the Cold War. And I began to think of this as a fight between an open source society and a secret state, just to oversimplify it. And I took a great interest for that reason. But also, the reaction of some in our government was wildly over the top. I was really afraid for the lives of the people like Julian Assange and others, because you had members of Congress who should know better calling for his assassination, treason trials, suspension of the Constitution, hunt him down like bin Laden. That's what Sarah Palin said. So I started to get involved. And also my oldest friend who just recently passed away, Leonard Weinglass, an attorney in New York, I was very close to him as he took on research about the issue of extradition, and he shared with me in phone calls his observations about the law and the dangers. And that led me to this story, which is being published in The Nation Online tomorrow. There was a beginning of the story on June 22nd in The Nation. You can go to tomhayden.com or to The Nation. But let me just begin briefly by saying that as I got into this story in the past month, there suddenly came a change of lawyers in the Assange case. He sits in London facing extradition to Sweden, where he faces a case involving charges of sexual assault by two Swedish women. He's fighting extradition to Sweden. And it had become a nasty fight against Sweden. And then suddenly, while I was in Sweden, the lawyers changed. He has a new attorney, a solicitor, they would call it, Gareth Pearce, who I know of and other listeners may know of from her work on Northern Ireland cases and on CIA rendition cases from Europe to places like Egypt. And she She's quite a lawyer, quite an expert on civil liberties and human rights, and I took a greater interest because I thought this was going to get very interesting. The problem with breaking it down is you have to follow several streams at once. One is Bradley Manning. Private Bradley Manning sits facing a life term in Fort Leavenworth, where he's accused of downloading hundreds of thousands of documents while he was listening to Lady Gaga, by the way. And the pressure on him is to turn evidence, if he has any, against Assange and others. So far, that hasn't happened. But the State Department spokesperson, P.J. Crowley, was so upset about our treatment of Manning that he went on a rage and said it was unprofessional, immoral, wrong, counterproductive, and he lost his job at the State Department just over that outburst over the Pentagon's treatment of Manning. So that's one issue. Two is the case of the federal grand jury convened by the Obama administration that sits in Alexandria, Virginia right now and is poring over possible evidence for an indictment of Assange on conspiracy to steal classified documents. And maybe an unindicted co-conspirator would be Manning or somebody in the hacking community in Boston or around the MIT, unclear. But if and when the American grand jury issues an indictment of Assange, which I have to stress may never happen, but could also happen at any time, then they would have to proceed to seek his extradition back to the United States to face these charges. As my friend, my late friend Len Weinglass said, what the Pentagon wants, the Justice Department wants, is a photo of Julian Assange in handcuffs being taken off a plane in New York and facing trial. So that could happen. That's the end game. It could also be prevented by public opinion and by good lawyering, good political movements. The third stream is the case in Sweden. Last August, Assange was invited to Sweden to give a talk. One of the people inviting him was a woman named Anna Arden, who is a press attaché for the Christian Social Democrats who were sponsoring the forum. She was so overwhelmed with the flood of foreign correspondents coming in that she asked a contact of mine, an associate of mine named Donald Bostrom, who is an investigative journalist, to take on the flood of journalists. He agreed to do so, and the event proceeded. The result in a two-day period or three-day period was that Assange found himself accused of sleeping with Anna Arden and unwanted, in American terminology, would be unwanted sexual activity took place, not only with her, but with another woman named Sophia Willen, who was unknown to Anna. The two cases of the two women became extremely complicated in a scenario where consensual sex turned into controversial encounters and a complaint to the police. The police complaint constituted what in Sweden would be called rape or sexual assault. It went out on the wires, which was prohibited by Swedish custom and regulations, but it became a global news story swirling around the world. Then a Swedish prosecutor the next day dropped the rape charge, then reinstituted another one. Then another lawyer was able to reinstitute the charges. The end result was that Assange was facing these sex charges in Sweden, and there was a whole eruption in the blogosphere that made it appear that somehow this was a CIA or FBI plot, that Sweden was in league with the United States to defame his character and derail the issue of WikiLeaks and replace it with some kind of sexual harassment case. Those are the charges he faces, and he's opposing extradition to Sweden to face those charges. He can't really argue, if I get to Sweden, I'm going to be taken by the CIA, although one of his previous lawyers pretty much said that, that he would be snatched if he went to face those charges. What I found in Sweden, and I wasn't looking for anything in particular, just feedback, was that he's antagonized, his lawyers have antagonized much of Swedish public opinion by the idea that he's not safe in Sweden, but he's safe in London, and by disparaging remarks that his lawyers or Assange have made about the women's case. I also found that most people overwhelmingly thought that because of the extradition law between European states, he would eventually be extradited to Sweden to face the sex charges. And he's only being investigated. He hasn't been indicted. He could be let loose. He could be sentenced to up to 4 years, anything in between. Most people thought it would be on the lesser end of punishment rather than the greater if the case ever came to trial. Then, and only then, could the U.S. demand his extradition. And that would give you the following scenario, my friends, and I'll just leave it here. Three countries would be the stage for protests: America, Sweden, and in Britain, because for Assange to ever be extradited back in manacles to the United States, it would require a request from the U.S., approval by Sweden after a process, and approval by the U.K., because it would be a new charge, not the sex charge, but a conspiracy charge. And, of course, there would be protests by Americans. And that could be, I don't even know the phrase for it, Spencer, Alan, trial of the century is too modest a description, because this is about the hottest case in the world if it escalates to that. I want to emphasize it may not come to that. Obama may think better than trying to resuscitate Assange as a world figure by dragging him in manacles to America. But there's people in our government who want Assange by any means necessary.
Alan Minsky here, I want to ask a question actually going back before the details in Sweden to the grand jury in the United States. They're looking for Manning to basically cry uncle, as it were, and give them evidence against Assange. I'm a little curious about that. I mean, doesn't WikiLeaks exist so that people who are whistleblowers can, send in state evidence? And so what further conspiracy are they looking for from Assange, that he held Manning's hand through the process or something? Or
I don't think we know that. Suffice to say that the subpoenas are being issued. There's a guy named David House in Boston who has one. There's several mentioned in my article. And I know how prosecutors work. I've been on the receiving end of a conspiracy charge, and they collect a little nugget here, a little tidbit there, a little piece there. They twist some arms. They pressure people. They tell you what will happen to you if you don't cooperate. So my conjecture is that they're trying to assemble a case against Assange as an example, using Manning, if possible, as an unindicted co-conspirator in exchange for his testimony. Whether he has anything to say, who knows? Because as Assange has said, the purpose of WikiLeaks is to not know the sources, because that's the best protection of a source. So it has to do with what is on various emails, not all of which have been disclosed to us. And there may be something there, there may not. I know this, that according to Mr. Weinglass, my late friend, the prosecution is trying to avoid a debacle like the Pentagon Papers. I was a witness in the Ellsberg-Russo case. The debacle was indicting the New York Times. So this may be something like a conspiracy to violate legal protections for computer owners and that sort of thing, to just not make it a freedom of the press issue, as if the press will therefore shrug it off. I mean, this is a freedom of the press issue, and with enough scrutiny and pressure, it could be that the grand jury will come up with nothing that they feel comfortable bringing to trial. I don't know. Then there's the case of Manning, who faces life, who's been horribly abused at Quantico. He may be in better conditions at Fort Leavenworth. We don't know. He's now been transferred from the Marines to the Army. And he deserves to be heard. If you contact my office or you look at the book WikiLeaks by David Lee, and you just read the emails that have been released, written by Bradley Manning, they are one of the most eloquent statements of a generation's plight that I have read since Allen Ginsberg's Howl.
Do you know where's the best place to find those?
Go online, get the book. It's called WikiLeaks by Lee, L-E-I-G-H. He's an editor of The Guardian in London.
Right.
And they're also posted on my website. If you go to tomhayden.com and click WikiLeaks and look for Bradley Manning, excerpts of Bradley Manning's emails.
Okay, great.
And isn't this bringing up, though, one of the issues that some people have talked about with the complexity of dealing with Julian Assange, where you have Bradley Manning, who seems to have had this purpose behind his releases, whereas Julian Assange, as many people have criticized him for, has this essential belief that all information should be public everywhere and it's not as politically interested in the same way that Bradley Manning may have been. And then people say, why are we going to defend this guy who seems to have no regard not only for information but also for people? How do his supporters respond to that?
Well, I don't know Julian Assange. I've watched the television programs about him. I've read everything that he said, and I don't share that view, and I think it would be typical of the left to split Manning from Assange, when in fact the U.S. government doesn't divide them. They think they're a conspiracy, and they want to add more to it. Assange is one of those brilliant revolutionaries. He may be one of the breakthrough revolutionaries of our time and the future, which doesn't mean that he's not human, that he doesn't have faults, or that he may have already reached the highest level of his achievement. And now he's facing martyrdom. So would you say, well, he's done his part, thank you. I don't share the view that he's non-political. He is thoroughly political, kind of an anarchist libertarian, I think. And he does have a view of the means of information distribution that Marx would have of a factory machine. He wants the liberation of all information. And in his circles, this notion that you referenced about all information should be free, it's a slogan. And it's appealing if you live in a suppressive, secretive society as we do. Now, obviously, not all information should be free, and the question is open as to who's in charge of the information, are they accountable, what's the role of secrecy, if any, in a democratic society, and so on. But in general, we suffer not from too many leaks. Too much secrecy is our problem. So, no, I think the Assange trial will captivate the world, and every effort has to be made at the same time to honor Manning as a different kind of hero and a real martyr at this point, but not separate them.
You started off, this is Alan Minsky here, and Tom Hayden is sitting in for Ian Masters, and I'm joined by Spencer Downing. You started off by talking about young hackers, anarchists around the world. And it certainly seems in the past few months even that some of the more spectacular information drops have actually come from other groups other than WikiLeaks. So it seems like this has inspired people around the world, with Anonymous in particular.
Well, when I was in the legislature in the 1980s, a young man in the family came to me. He lived in Santa Monica. I don't remember his name. He was a teenager. And he had hacked into the ARPA computers, Advanced Research Pentagon Institution. And they came down on him. I've never seen anything like it. Like, he was Joseph Stalin or something. Right. He's a 14, 16-year-old guy. And he got off on his skill, his pride as a young man, and it's very much a young man's game, his pride in being able to hack the man and get into the system,
right.
Which, you know, you have to honor the spirit, but obviously there, you got two choices. One is to try to repress them and squash them everywhere they pop up, or recognize you're keeping too many secrets. Not because human lives are at stake, but because bureaucrats love secrecy. I remember Howard Zinn 10, 20 years ago giving a speech that really stuck with me. It was about the Pentagon Papers. And he said, you know, they keep secrets from the American people. I mean, the Vietnamese know what bombs are being dropped on them. The American people don't know.
Right.
You keep secrets from the people that you're afraid of, that you consider potential enemies. The American people are scaring the American government. You're the potential enemy. It really struck me. That's the core point. And one of the reforms that eventually will have to come out of this is the declassification of tons of secret documents that are just kept secret so as to not embarrass anybody. Where you draw the line? That'll be a KPFA debate for 50 years.
This is Spencer Downing, producer for Background Briefing, with Tom Hayden sitting in for Ian Masters. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back talking further about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks.